turn on the record. Okay. We are in the middle of Perek Gimel and of Shmuel Bet. And in the beginning of Perek Gimel, we saw that Ishbosheth and Avner have a very serious, let's call it a falling out, where Ishbosheth saw Avner getting a little bit too powerful, took Shaul's Pilegesh as if he was the heir to the throne. Ishbosheth accuses him of treason. Avner doesn't take to that kindly. And so he threatens to change sides and join David, and not only join David, but actually bring all of Israel with him in a way of a kind of sort of eliminating Ishbosheth's claim to the throne. He makes good on that threat, and he makes an offer to David to actually send messages to David and says, I will come over to your side. And David's response was surprising to Avner, perhaps, surprising to us, but David's response was to request that they return to him Michal bat Shaul, who had been given over to somebody else after David had been forced to flee. Part of that was David's sense that he did not want to conquer his way into the kingdom, but rather, while married to Michal, he had a claim to the throne that was legal, because he was the son-in-law of Shaul. And so he really wanted to bring this united kingdom together in peace, or peacefully. And so in order to do that, I'm just going to, it's harder to remember where things are when you're not looking at the page of a Tanakh. Pasuk Yedaled, Pasuk Yud Gimel, Vayomer Tov Ani Echot Itcha Brit, Ach Davar Echad Anachi Shoel Meitcha Lemor Lo Tiret Panai, Ki Im Lifnei V'Yachat Michal Bat Shaul B'Vorcha Lirot Et Panai. Just out of a curiosity, do you see my mouse marching along the screen too, or just the text?
I see the mouse moving along.
See the mouse moving around.
Okay, that way I can keep us together. So in fact, and then he sends a message to Ishbosheth.
I see the mouse also.
Yeah. Okay, great. Then he sends a message to Ishbosheth to say to Ishbosheth, if you give me back my wife, then more or less the implication is that you are Michal's brother, and I will bring you into this kingdom as well. So in all efforts, he's trying to unite the kingdom peacefully rather than through war. The end result is that Avner comes to him and brings with him Binyamin, the loyalty of Binyamin and the loyalty of the rest of Israel. They come together, they make a feast, and in fact, he makes good on this promise. I will go and I'll gather together all of Israel to join you, and you shall reign over all of Israel. So Avner is really handing David the entire kingdom, including Michal, and the keys to Malchut Yisrael. The spoiler in this, of course, is that the one person who's not there is Yoav. Intentionally or unintentionally, we'll never know. And Avner leaves, and Yoav shows up shortly thereafter, together with his spoils of war of his latest campaign. Yoav v'chol tzavar shirito ba'u v'yagidu liyoav le'mor ba'av ner ben ner el ha'melech v'yishachayu v'yilech b'shalom. Yoav is told that Avner came to David. Yoav immediately suspects foul play, duplicity, and whether he really thought that Avner was being sort of deceitful or not, we'll never know, because our chief witness doesn't live to tell the tale. What had you done? Yoav says to David, Abner came here and you let him go. Don't you know that Abner came to deceive you? Here's a spy. David doesn't react. We don't know what David's reaction is. Yoav decides to act on his own. David lo yada. Clearly, David is unaware of Yoav's intent. Vayashav Avner Chevron. Yoav returns Avner to Chevron. Yater Yoav otoch hashar ledaber ito bashelev yakeu shem achomesh v'yamot bedam asael achiv. And Yoav kills Avner there, he murders him in cold blood for the revenge for the blood of Asael, his brother. And that's more or less, we spent some time discussing a little bit of Avner's motivation and the consequences, and Yoav's motivation. We are going to pick up from here, from Pasuk Chav Chet, because really what I wanted to focus on today was David's reaction. David is in a very precarious position. He's in a precarious position because Avner came to him in all honesty and integrity. David opened up his arms to him. They had a feast together. They broke bread together. And Avner had brought with him the loyalty of Binyamin and the people of Israel and the promise of unification of the entire kingdom under David's reign. From the perspective of the people, what happened? From the perspective of the people, the result seems to be, remember that Yoav is David's chief of staff, or chief military officer, head of the army. From the perspective of the people, it would seem that David acted with duplicity. David acted immorally. David, in some way, enabled, empowered, or even authorized Yoav to kill him. David is in a very precarious position. So what needs to happen? What is David's immediate reaction? What must he do? I'm going to throw that up to an open question. What is David's most pressing, urgent need at that moment?
To show his name.
Jackie, you've got an open mic. Right, what must he do at that moment? You're welcome to chime in. Sorry, you're on mute if you're speaking.
Okay, just to show that he wasn't involved, that he didn't know this was going to happen.
Right. He has to do everything in his power to distance himself from this act. That is not a simple matter because most people, I think, would have potentially believe that David could have done it. David certainly could have. Whether he would have depends on how well you know David. If you know David well, you know that he would not have ever sanctioned such a thing. Not everybody would have believed that. And certainly the people of Binyamin and Yisrael and the rest of Klal Yisrael would not have been so quick to believe that Yoav acted on his own. Think about all the political scandals where the person's claim was, I was acting on my own, top level of authority, didn't know about it, right? Kind of raises a suspicion. So what we're going to see from here to the end of the perek is an extraordinary effort on behalf of David to completely distance himself from any effort of, or any connection to this murder. And the way he does that is quite significant, is that he demonstrates a very public and very broad mourning, Avelos, eulogy, really sort of gives the covered to Avner far beyond anything that anybody would have done at that time. So we're going to start, we're going to pick up from Pasuk Chaf Chet up here at the top of the page. Vishmad David me'achrechen, v'yomer, naki enochi u'mamlachti me'im Hashem ad olam, midmei Avner b'ner. First thing he does is he makes a public declaration. I and my kingdom are blameless, are clean from any connection to the blood of Avner b'ner. He makes a public declaration that this is not me, that I am had no involvement in this. And then further, Yachulu al Rosh Yoav. It's all the fault of Yoav. This is on him and on his head. Ve'el kol beit aviv. And on his household. Now, this is something we would not do today because it's very foreign for us in terms of our frame of reference. But in the context of Tanakh, if you want to punish somebody, the way you punish them is by cursing them and their household for generations, for eternity. That's sort of the biblical format of a curse. So, v'al yikaret mi bet Yoav, Zav u'mitzarao machzik ba'pelech v'nafel b'cheret v'chasar lechem. Let there never fail from the house of Yoav, meaning let Yoav's house be one of generations to come, one of lepers and poor and paupers and those who die in battle and those who can't eat, who can't afford bread. Think about every modern kind of slang curse you can imagine. Throws it on Yoav, and he says, let him and his household be cursed forever. Again, Yoav is his general, chief of staff. Yoav is also his nephew. You have to constantly remember that Yoav ben Tsruya, Avishai ben Tsruya, Asael ben Tsruya, Tsruya is David's sister. And so this is within the family as well as within the context of the army of Israel, the kingdom of Israel. This is a very dramatic and powerful statement that one would not make lightly. But he makes it and he says it as part of this effort to demonstrate that he is naki midme Avner, that he has nothing to do with the murder of Avner. Pasuk Lamed, Yoav Avishai Achiv Hargu LaAvner Al Asher Himit Et Asael Achihem BeGivon BeMelchama. We are then told by the Navi, by the text, to confirm that Yoav and Avishai together were the ones guilty of murdering Avner as vengeance for the blood of Asael who was killed in Givon. So it comes back to that point, that pasuk we actually spent some time on our last class. It comes back to that point that Yoav and Avishai acted on their own. But that in itself is not sufficient because you don't have, you have a statement. You have, let's call it my word against his word. So David has to make a much more public demonstration. Pasuk Lamed Aleph, Vayomer David el Yoav, ואל כל העם אשר איתו, קיראו בגדיכם וחיגרו שק וסיפדו לפני אבנר. והמלך דוד הולך אחר המיטה. David then makes this very public mourning process. קיראו בגדיכם, tear your garments, חיגרו שק, wear sackcloth, Sibdu lifnei Avner, eulogize, wail before Avner, speak, divrei hesped, and on top of all of that, the Melech David olech acharei amita, David himself sort of followed the funeral, followed the casket, followed behind as they went down to bury Avner, and vayikburu et Avner b'chevron, vayisa Melech et kolo, vayef El kever Avner vayivku kol ha'am. David brings him to Hebron. Hebron is his. Hebron is the capital of Yehuda. If he buries him in Hebron, although we don't know where, he buries him in a place of honor, in as if to say he gives him a state funeral. And to give Avner a state funeral, we remember that up until yesterday, so to speak, Avner was a mortal enemy. Avner was the chief of staff of Ishbosheth and the rebellion against David. To give Avner a royal state funeral in public with all of the people, with divrei hesped and sackcloth and tearing their garments and walking in front of the funeral or behind, all of this is designed to not only give Avner the proper kavod, but also to really express to the people that David was truly remorseful over all that had transpired. We'll see his kina in a moment. Just want to point out something about this phrase, V'amalach David olech achareha mita. Why is that in and of itself significant, that David followed the bier, followed behind in the funeral? So point out to you an interesting Gemara. I'm going to flip. You're not going to see it. I'm going to flip pages. Hang on a second. You see this source page? All right. This is a Gemara in Sanhedrin. Gemara in Sanhedrin is talking about various aspects of Malchus, and the Gemara there says, Met lamet eno yotze mipetach platrin shelo. If a king experiences a death in the family, so out of respect to the position of the king, of the melech, the king is not allowed to leave the palace. Very different from today's context of state funerals. But if Yehuda omer, im yotze latzet achar mita yotze, Yehuda says, no, he's allowed to go behind the bier, behind the funeral. He's allowed to go. It's a relative. He's mitlamet. Shechein matzinu b'David sheyetzeh achar mitato shel Avner, because we find that David followed behind the funeral of Avner. Shneimar v'amelach David olech achar mita. To which they said to Rabbi Yehuda, Amru lo, lo haya davar elo lefayes et ha'am. David didn't do that because the king is allowed to go and participate in a normal funeral. David did that because he really needed to demonstrate the kind of appeasement to the people. He needed to bring the people to understand that he had to distance himself from Avner's murder. So here again, the Gemara is identifying the behavior of David as exceptional, precisely because of the effort that David is making to demonstrate the distance from the experience, from the murder, and from the actions of Yoav. All right, let's go back to Torah. Okay.
Can I ask you a question? It's Adina. You may. I don't know. Where is everybody in this? Because all of a sudden he's flipping sides. Isn't anybody nervous or wanting to know? He's flipping sides and doing all of this.
Yoav was nervous. Yoav was so nervous that he had him killed.
Yeah, okay. But I mean, David is switching sides.
No, not David. David is not switching sides. Avner had switched sides. That's the mystery. Avner had switched sides, and David took him at his word. Now, David took him at his word because David has been waiting for this moment for a long time. For David, he would welcome the opportunity with open arms. Did he trust Avner completely? Maybe he knew what was going on behind the scenes. Maybe he didn't. We don't know. But he brought him back Michal, which was his condition. He was now able to claim a legal claim to the throne. He trusted Avner's remorse, and sometimes you go with your gut. Sometimes you have to go with your intuition. He felt that Avner was correct.
What about the rest of the people? I mean,
So the rest of the people is an interesting question. I'm going to suggest, as we go through this, pay careful attention to the phrase Kol Ha'am.
Okay, well, that's really what I didn't understand, because why is the nation all of a sudden, hearing him do all this?
Yeah, so take a look. You'll see it here in Pasuk Lamed Hey Kol Ha'am. Pay attention to
going back to mute.
That's okay. You can stay up. Coming back to this phrase Kol Ha'am, you'll see it over and over again. It's an interesting emphasis in the text. So be that as it may, coming back for a moment to the efforts that David undergoes in order to demonstrate remorse and mourning, the breadth of this experience of mourning is really unprecedented. You're talking about kriya and sackcloth and hesped and walking behind the funeral, and then giving him a state funeral in Chevron, and crying vayevka lakever avner vayivku kol ha'am. He cried, the people cried, everybody's crying. Right? There is this sense that, maybe over the top, but a sense of that this is a really national tragedy. Now you have to ask yourself, where is Yoav in all of this? Right? Yoav is standing there watching all of this from the sidelines. And then he offers a kina. Now David is known for kina. What was the last kina we saw David write or express? What was the last kina David wrote?
After Shaul died.
Correct. He wrote the kina for, and he publicized the kina that he wrote for Shaul and Yonatan. It was a very powerful kina. It was the opening parak of Shmuel Bet. So now for the second time in three prakim, David offers a kina. This kina, however, is a little different. But it does indicate that this is a state hesped. This is a stately comment. Vayikonen ha-melech el avner. It's not David. Vayikonen David al avner. This is Vayikonen ha-melech el avner vayomar. Hakimot naval yamut avner. Should avner die as a churl dieth? Meaning, this is so inappropriate that David, that the great avner should die like a Naval, like a nobody, like a nothing, like a robber, like a yadcha lo asurot, your hands were not bound, but aglecha lo chushtayim ugashu, your feet were not in fetters and chains, kinefolif nebine avla nafalta, but rather you fell like, or as a man falls before bine avla, people of iniquity, yosifu kol ha'am lifkot alav, the people began to cry. What a tragedy. You Avner, should be killed like by a Bnei Avla. Who is the Bnei Avla here that he's referring to? That you should fall before people of iniquity. Who's the Bnei Avla that he's referring to?
Yoav?
Yoav. Right. So again, you have to kind of put yourselves into the... Who's sitting on the sidelines and watching this, which is Yoav, and how David reacts and responds to him. It's really quite extraordinary. But this is not a kina that, if you remember, if you compared this kina to the kina to Shaul and Yonatan, David had spent half the kina to Shaul and Yonatan describing their personalities, who they were, what kind of people they were. It was a real hesped. This is a description of Yoav's death. Because Yoav and Avner's death, because David and Avner don't have a personal relationship. Right? I mean, they may have way back when, but they haven't had for a very long time. And he's really not doing this as a kind of a personal eulogy, Vayikonen David. This is a state eulogy, Vayikonen HaMelech. And the primary focus of this hesped is on the manner in which the chief of staff of Ishboshet Melech Yisrael was killed. This is a state funeral. This is a tragedy because a man who was a general of an army and a very powerful man was killed as if he was mugged in the streets. Pasuk Lamed Hey. Vayavok kol ha'am lehavrot et David lechem ba'od hayom. People came to give David bread to eat that day. What minug is the Navi identifying here? Minhag Yisrael ad hayom hazeh, till today, this minhag still exists.
That you get bagels and eggs when you come back from the funerals.
More or less. I don't know about the bagels, but the eggs for sure. It's called a Su'udat Havra'ah, and it comes from this word, Lahavrot. The Su'udat Havra'ah is the first meal mourners eat when they come back from the funeral, and it's a meal that is brought to them by the people, by the Menachamim, the people who are coming to, right? Not a meal that they don't prepare themselves. A lot of people think that an oval is not allowed for the entire Shiva, not allowed to prepare themselves meals. It's not true. It's only the first meal that the minhag is for the community to bring to the Avel as a kind of expression of connection of the community.
So that everybody who does that today, it's really just a minhag?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a minhag. I mean, all of Dini Avel is really a minhag, but the true minhag is, as it's brought down on the Shulchan Aruch, is to... In a second, my printer came alive for a minute for some reason, so I'm the true minhag comes from here, which is the Sukkot Havra by Avokal Am Lehavrot et David Lech. David's reaction: Vayishava David Lemor Koya Seli Elokim V'Choyasif Ki Im Lifnei Bo Hashemesh Etam Lechem Okom Uma. Says David, I take an oath, I will not eat bread today until the sun sets. Meaning that even though the minhag was to bring the Avelim food, the purpose of bringing the Avelim food is to bring them comfort. And David's reaction to it is, I don't want to be comforted. This is a day of mourning. This is a national tragedy. And I would rather spend it in fasting and sackcloth and ashes. End result. V'chol ha'am hikiru v'yitav b'einahem k'chol asher asa ha'melech b'einei kol ha'am tov. People noticed and that pleased them that whatever the king did pleased the people. Meaning, here you have in Pasuk Lamed Vav the conclusion of this entire effort. Namely, was he successful in convincing the people that his mourning was true and that he did not have anything to do with Avner's death? That's ultimately the question that the Navi leaves us with, which is that this really truly was powerful enough for the people to be convinced that that David had no hand in Avner's death. That was the most important message David needed to convey at this moment. If he didn't, what did he risk?
Will turn against him.
Say it again.
Wait a minute.
Now you're unmuted. Now you're muted. Now you're muted. What does he risk if he doesn't succeed in convincing the people that he had nothing to do with Avner's death?
His kingship. The people wouldn't pay attention to him anymore. They wouldn't want him to be king.
His kingship, possibly, or worse. Which is,
they would kill him? I don't know.
I don't like killing him, but he risks an all-out civil war. Because remember, Avner had brought with him the loyalty of Benjamin and all of the tribes of the north. Meaning this was a peace effort, a peace overture by the king of the other kingdom, right? The king of Israel, or the general of Israel. Think back for a moment. I'll put it into simple terms. Think back for a moment when Sadat came to Jerusalem in a peace effort with Egypt. Whatever the consequences were, and whatever one's political feelings are on the end results of the Camp David Accords, but Sadat came to Jerusalem and he sat and he spoke in the Knesset. I remember watching that speech. Can you imagine what would have happened if at that moment he had been assassinated in Jerusalem?
What not a pleasant time.
Right. And no claim, no justification, no words from any prime minister of Israel would have been able to convince the people that this was a lone assassin, not acting in the interest of the state, especially if it had been perpetrated by the chief of staff or the head of the army. This was the challenge that David faced. Avner came to him in a peace effort, representing all of the northern tribes. And in that moment, Yoav killed him. And the result was a potential all-out civil war between the northern kingdoms and Yehuda, that whether David would have emerged victorious or not, we'll never know. Thank God it never happened. But the potential for a terrible tragedy was what David was risking. And so it was crucial that we get to Pasuk Lamed Vav. V'chol ha'am mikiru v'yitav be'enehem k'chol asher asa ha'melech b'enei kol ha'am tov, that the people took notice and they were convinced. And it wasn't just the people of Yehuda you had to convince, this was all the people, kol ha'am. Adina mentioned before the question of where the people are at, and I suggested taking a close look at this phrase, kol ha'am. I want to show you an interesting observation. Let's see, I got these different programs for this because different programs do different things. All right, does everybody see the next screen that I put up here? Yeah, that's the Bar Ilan database text. And the reason I put this up here is because I'm gonna do a simple search on the phrase kol ha'am. And how many times, this isn't gonna do it. Okay, let's go back to here. Let's go back to I can't remember how I did it. I did it in one of the programs. All right, count it yourself. How many times does the phrase kol ha'am appear between Pasuk Lamed
Aleph
from where we began, Pasuk Chav Chet, and the end of the parak? Etc. Here's a way to do this. One second. Let's do it this way. All right. Kol ha'am v'yomen David al Yoav v'el kol ha'am v'yev el kever Avner v'yivku kol ha'am yetchal lo asro v'reglecho l'anuchu shtayim mugash v'kinfo b'nei avla nafal tov yosifu kol ha'am livkot ala v'yevo kol ha'am l'avot et David lechem. וכל העם הכירו והייתה ביניהם וכל אשר יישא המלך בעיני כל העם טוב. וידעו כל העם בכל ישראל ביום ההוא, כי לא הייתה מהמלך למית את אבנר בן נר. At that time, all of the people and all of Israel knew that David had nothing to do with the death of Avner. And that's the most important conclusion. It's explicit, it's in the text, it needs to be said. The goal, the purpose, the agenda of everything David has demonstrated in his public mourning has been to reach the point where the people truly understand that David had nothing to do with Avner's death. How many times does the phrase kol ha'am appear?
Eight.
Seven.
Eight.
Eight. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven. I counted seven. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, seven or eight would be either way, but it is in fact seven. Seven times, that's not an insignificant number. Beyond that, I don't need to embellish. The fact that this phrase is here so many times is because that's the focus that David is intending. He's directing his efforts at Kol Ha'am, the whole people.
He ran a successful PR campaign.
A very successful PR campaign. But ultimately, the goal being to distance himself from Yoav. All right, so that is agenda number one. The problem is that it doesn't
Does this happen a lot where you get seven or eight phrases like this about a particular situation?
Yes, it's called in the study of Tanakh, it's called a milat mancha, a key word. And keywords are typically words that will appear in a text or in a story multiple times, but when they're in multiples of seven, they're particularly significant. So the answer to that question is yes.
Oh, that's quite interesting. especially when you went back to try to show us how the thesaurus or whatever you were doing looks with those phrases. I like that.
You can use that here.
Mm-hmm. All right. So up until now, David has dealt with one challenge, which is how to address the people and the potential implication of Yoav's actions for him and his leadership of Israel. But David has another problem, and he can't leave this parak without addressing this other problem, which is.
What to do with Yoav?
Yoav is a thorn in his side. He's also his nephew. What to do with Yoav? So here the pasuk says the following: the last two psukim of perek of this perek. Vayomer Melech el Avadav. King says to his servants, "Halo tedu, ki sar v'gadol nafal hayom hazeh b'Yisrael." No. Today, a prince and a great man has fallen in Israel, referring, of course, to Avner. Va'anochi hayom rach u'mashuach melech. And I today am young, weak, soft, rach, u'mashuach melech, just newly anointed. Va'anashim ha'ele b'nei tzuya kashim yimeni. But these children, these sons of Tzuria, they are harder than me. They are harder than me, too hard for me, whatever the translation is, kashim yimeni. Yishalem Hashem lo sehara'a kira'ato. May God punish the evildoer according to his evil. That's how the parak ends. What has David just said?
Somebody should go out and kill him.
May God pay him back for his evil deeds. But if you make a statement like that, what essentially are you implying? Who's not going to punish him for his evil deeds?
His relatives.
David.
I mean, the implication is really extraordinary. David is saying to his people, because... And why is he making this statement to his people? I'm assuming because what's not said is that he then faced within his own ranks an almost a rebellion. I was like, how do you continue to let this guy run amok in your kingdom? Look at the trouble he's caused you. And so Vayomer, we're not hearing that first part of the conversation, which is between Pasuk Lamed and Lamed Chet, what the Avdei David said to David. So get rid of him, kill the guy, get rid of him. You're right. You're 100% right. A terrible tragedy has occurred. But I am too young, too positioned too weakly, and too new to be able to really deal with Bnei Tzuria. Let God strike them down. Let God deal with them. I can. Which is really an extraordinary statement for David to make. And I challenge whether or not that's in fact the case. We're going to come back to that in a moment. There are, as time progresses, we know that Yoav stays in this position as general of David's army for a number of years. In fact, he remains there through the story of Shimon ben Gera, And ultimately, I'll show you two other places where it's mentioned. If you take a look in Perek Tetzayin, which is by the rebellion of Avshalom, there, I've just jumped to Perek Tetzayin. There the Pasuk says, David will say it again, ויאמר אבישי בן צרויה למלך, למה יקלל לכלב המת הזה לאדוני המלך עברנה ואסיר את ראשו? Back to אבישי בן צרויה, who wanted to kill Shimon ben Gera for cursing David. ויאמר המלך, מה לי ולכם בני צרויה? What am I going to do with you, sons of צרויה? כי יקלל, השם אמר לו לקלל. Whatever his reaction was, he says, what am I going to do with you, B'nai Tzuya? We see it again in Pasuk, Perek Yud Tet, after the rebellion of Avshalom, in Pasuk Chav Gimel. Vayan Avishai ben Tzuya, Vayomer Atachat Zot Lo Yumat Shimi, Ki Kilel at Mashiach Hashem. Again, Shimi ben Gera wants to, Avishai wants to kill Shimi ben Gera, Vayomer David, Ma li v'lachem b'nei tzuya ki tiyu li ayom l'satan. What am I going to do with you, b'nei tzuya? Now, in the end, so up until all the way till the end of the story, Yoav remains chief of staff, head of the army of David, until Yoav commits his second murder. And his second murder is to kill Amasa ben Yetro, I believe. And at that point, we'll get to that story, but at that point, David has no choice but to relieve Yoav of his position as chief of staff. You know, my heart goes out for David a little bit, because you should deal with him right away and just depose him, get rid of him, and when your chief general goes out and threatens and does something illegal that puts the entire Malchus under the potential threat of civil war and potentially undermines everything that you are, normally you would depose such a chief of staff. At the very minimum, you'd expect him to be fired from his post. And yet we see him continue in this role for almost till the end of the Sefer. So I think that this pasuk is coming a little bit why that is the case. At this point in time, David saw himself as too weak to be able to deal with the very powerful and very entrenched B'nai Tzuria, who he saw as Kashimimim. That's one part of the story. But it's not the whole story. So this you won't find in the Mefarshim. I'll share with you a thought. It's a thesis.
Can I ask you a question?
You may.
Because you said this is one of the times that he felt he was weak. Are there other times that David felt he was weak?
Oh, absolutely.
A lot? A little?
Absolutely. Most famously, in the aftermath of the story of Bathsheba. The whole story of Amnon and Tamar and the rebellion of Adoniel, and Amnon and Tamar and the rebellion of Avshalom, David flees, David retreats, David runs away, because he felt that he did not have the moral or legal leg to defend himself for. But David, there are moments in David's life, and it's very clear in Tehillim in many places, where David felt weak, David felt helpless. It was a very hard experience, very hard life.
A very good characteristic of a king, right?
It's a reflection of a maybe. I mean, look, he will gain strength in position. I think he knew his position probably better than anybody. I think he was more self-aware of his position than anybody else.
Okay.
But I'm going to leave that for another conversation. Now, so I'll show you an interesting anomaly. It's an anomaly that has no explanation. except maybe a theory that I'm going to share with you that I heard from Rav Meidan. It may explain what's going on here, not explicit in the text. But this is Perek Gimel. I'm going to jump to Perek Hey. Okay, so we're just going to move forward a little bit. Perek Dalid is the aftermath of the death of Avner and ultimately the rebellion in the ranks where they kill Ishbosheth. And then after the death of Ishbosheth, they finally come to David in Perek Hey. All the tribes of Israel come to David and Chevron. They speak to him and they say to him, "You are our flesh and blood." Even when Shaul was king, you were really the general. You were really the force behind the military. God told you that you would lead Israel. We are here. All of Ziknei Israel, we've come to you to make a breach with you and to make you melech. This is the moment when David goes from being king of Hebron, or king of Yehuda, to being the king of all of Israel. Okay, it's in Perek Hey. And we are told that it's 7 years. Ben shlishim shana David b'mocho arba'im shana malach, b'chavon malach ha'yehuda sheva shanim, b'shishar chodeshim b'yushalayim malach, shlishim v'shalosh shana, kind of a summation or an introduction to part two of David's life. 7 years he spent in Hebron, 33 years he'll spend in Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim has not been mentioned yet. The very first thing David does, as when the people come to him and say, "We want you to be king over Israel," the very first thing David does is, "Vayelech hamelech v'anashav Yerushalayim, ela yivusi yosheva aretz." He comes to Yerushalayim, to the Jebusites in Yerushalayim, who, whether in peace or in war, it's unclear. He wants to conquer, he wants to take Yerushalayim and make Yerushalayim the capital of a united kingdom. We will study this Perek and why Yerushalayim at length when we get to Perek Hey. But I want to show you one observation. The people, the Jebusites, refuse to let David in. Vayilkod David et mitzudat Tzion, hi'ir David. David took the stronghold of Tzion, the city of David, conquered it. That's all it says. Vayeshev David b'mitzuda. We have no information as to how it was conquered, who conquered it, the challenge of conquering it. None of that's here. All we know is he goes to Yerushalayim and he conquers it. The same story appears in Divrei Hayamim, with one caveat. I'm going to jump to Divrei Hayamim. We're going to jump to Divrei Hayamim Aleph, Perek Yud Aleph, and go down to Pasuk Dalet. Same story. Vayelech David al kol Yisrael Yerushalayim hiYevus, v'sham haYevusi yishvei haaretz. David comes to Yerushalayim, also called Yevus. Vayomru yishvei Yevus leDavid lo tavo hena, v'yilkod David et mitzvat Tzion. Now look at Pasuk Vav. Vayomer David, kol makeh yivusi barishona, yeh l'rosh u'lasara. Whoever manages to conquer Yerushalayim will become my head and my general. Vayal barishona, Yoav ben Tsruya vayehi l'rosh. The first person to go was Yoav ben Tsruya, and he was made the chief. So the Mefarshim struggle with a very simple question, which is, he was already chief of staff. He was already the general. He's been the general all along, and he'll continue to be the general all along. How is it that David offered a lottery? Whoever conquers Yerushalayim will be my chief of staff. He was taking it away from Yoav. So the Malbim says, if you take a look, I pulled up the Mikra Kedolot version of this page. So I pulled this pasuk up at the top. You see it?
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
And now here comes the Malbim, and he says, Yesh hevdel ben rosh v'sar, sheyesh sar she'en rosh, ma Yoav sheyah sar hatzava. Yoav was already the sar hatzava. V'lo aya rosh ha-Yisrael, but he wasn't the head. He was only a military leader. And therefore, David was offering whoever will conquer will be not just a military leader, but a political leader as well. Yeh rosh ha'ir. In modern Hebrew, rosh ha'ir is a mayor. And that's a possibility. But I want to show you the Targum. Targum says here, whoever will conquer Yevus, Yitmane Lerav Chela, will be appointed to the head of the Chel, the army. And so it was, Yoab ben Tsruya, Bahavi Leresh Chela, became the head of the army. So how is it possible that somebody who's already the head of the army could become the head of the army? It's really only one possibility, which is?
He was fired.
If at some point fired. He lost that position. So there's a conjecture put out by Medan, and I actually think it has a lot of truth to it, a lot of power to it, that at this moment in time, here in Perek Gimel, when David faced an uprising from amongst his own people, and even though he felt that Bnei Tzriah were kashim imeni, he had no choice. And for a period of time, he actually deposes Yoav ben Tzriah, fires him from his position as chief of staff, as the last demonstration or the last thing he does to demonstrate a distancing from the murder of Avner. Unfortunately for David, comes to the conquest of Yerushalayim, and the strongest general in his army, unquestionably, is Yoav ben Tzruya. And when it comes to the conquest of Yerushalayim, and Yoav is the only one who can lead the battle to conquer Yerushalayim, he has no choice but to put him back into that position, and so he ends up being reinstated after the battle of Yerushalayim. That's the theory, that at this moment in time, he actually does fire him, and then after the conquest of Yerushalayim, he gets restored to that post because that's the position he'll have until the end of the Sefer. So it's a conjecture, it's a guess, but it makes a lot of sense, especially if you consider the role of Yoav in Divayim.
Does anyone suggest that the Sar Gadol, the Gadol in Lamed Hei, is a hint to Yoav that he's no longer the Sar?
You wouldn't use the word nafal. Nafal is a word that really means death.
Fits in nice.
In modern lexicon, you would say somebody who's fallen from his position of stature. But in biblical terms, nafal hayom means death. So I don't think that would work in the pshat.
Okay.
But it's a good try.
But inwardly, David really never lost faith in him, because if he reinstated him, it meant that inwardly, he really felt
that he reinstates him after the conquest of Yerushalayim when he has no choice. He makes his public declaration that whoever conquers Yerushalayim will become the chief of staff, and the only one who can do it is Yoav ben Tzruya. So he really has no choice. I don't think he ever really embraces Bnei Tzruya. How many times does he try to push them away, curse them, challenge them, distance himself from them? Ma liva lachem bnei Tzruya. They were a thorn in his side until the end of his days. Which is why, by the way, what's the first thing he commands Shlomo HaMelech to do when Shlomo becomes king?
Kill his enemies.
To take care of the remaining unaddressed issues, which is, here's the beginning of Melachim Aleph, Perek Bet. This is David speaking to Shlomo. David on his deathbed says to Shlomo, "Ata yadata et kol asher asali Yoav ben Tzruya, asher asali shnei sarei tzivot Yisrael." You know what Avner, what Yoav is capable of. He killed in cold blood two generals of Israel, Avner ben Ner ulamasa ben Yeter. Vayargen, killed them in cold blood. People who came in peace, and he turned that peace into the blood of war. He took the blood of war as his girded, he walked in blood. This is how he lived. And therefore he says to Shlomo on David's deathbed, you do what I could never do. Deal with Yoav and Tzruiah, take care of him. I could never do it. You need to. And he does. So it's a weak link in David's reign, but he closes the loop, if you will, with Shlomo, and Shlomo will deal with Yoav and Tzruiah at the end, at the beginning of Melachim Bet. We will address that story, Bezrat Hashem, when we get to Melachim Aleph, we got to get to the rest of Shmuel Bet first. All right, we're going to adjourn here. I thank you for joining us via this unique medium. I hope it was helpful to you. I know it's not quite the same as the interaction that takes place around the table in Shul, but at least we get to continue our learning and our interaction with each other.
Thank you.
It's fantastic. Thank you.
That's great. Great.
Thank you.
All right.
All right. Till next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Everybody.